Yeah, Zebulon, Elon, I, the Tetragrammaton, the Lord God Most High, I do exercise thee and do powerfully command thee, O Spirit. Elon, I, the Tetragrammaton, the Lord God Most High, I do exercise thee and do powerfully command.
In the dark shadows, in the white cold, fearlessly we search for knowledge new and old. We drink the strong spirits and read the ancient tomes. The order of the Abracast. We are the brave and the bold. Occult, history, conspiracy, and violence.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Abracast. I'm your host, John Towers. Dr. John Towers, if you want to be more formal about it. Hey, I want to apologize for taking all the time off, and those of you who reached out to me on various methods and means to ask if I was doing okay, give me some words of encouragement. Like I said, if you listen to the show long enough, I'm as open as I can be about my kind of depression issues and some personal things that I have to deal with in my everyday life. You know, everybody's okay. I'm okay. Violet's all right. Everybody's doing okay. And I just, I figure as long as I have, you know, this platform here, and as long as the world is ending, I might as well try to document it in some fashion and let you guys know kind of what I think about some of this stuff. It's interesting looking around, though. You know, people are talking, you know, about the wider picture of sort of the battle that's being fought, and I'm hearing people talk about it in terms of spiritual warfare, and I'm like, hey, that's good. We have like a whole kind of like 101 course on spiritual warfare. Of course, it's not a giant globe spanning cosmos level battle of spiritual warfare. It's more of like the one-on-one kind of spiritual warfare, dealing with demons and dark forces in everyday life. So I'm like, yeah, we got that. And then it's like, well, you know, it's a problem with the media. And I'm like, hey, I cover that too. You know, we talk a lot about like the media and, you know, conspiracy factoids now, or whatever they're calling them. You know, it's like, I kind of got that covered. And I feel like we do conspiracy here in a responsible way. And usually that boils down to dipping our toes in sort of the political landscape, how media skews coverage, how big tech, you know, skews your thoughts. Like, so if you're interested in all of those sort of aspects, you know, the website is still up. I haven't done a steady show since November, I think. So, you know, the website's still up. All the feature topic links should still be working, whether the shows are archived or not, or if they're on the regular feed. So hit up that feature topic link, and we've kind of been doing 101, 201, 301 stuff on a lot of the things that are happening in the world, you know, right now. Even sort of like metaphorically, like, you know, we're chipping away through Exodus still. And you know, a lot of times in Exodus, the Hebrews are like, let's just go back and let Pharaoh rule us. Like, there's an innate thing with maybe all of humanity, you know, there's a little it's easier just to bend the knee kind of stuff. And, you know, I feel like some of us are kind of down with that and like rushing towards that nowadays. You know, if ever, and I heard this statistic about the Revolutionary War, where actually only 30% of Americans were in favor of the Revolutionary War. And those 30% were the go-getters. They're the ones that changed the fucking world. Interested in all of that stuff. We've touched on a lot of that stuff. However you perceive the sort of state of the world that we're in now, you know, the Abercast has done a lot of groundwork for, I guess, what's coming, right? Like, what's coming. So, talking about sort of politics and talking about the media and this sort of stuff, I want to talk about the Seymour Hersh Nord Stream pipeline thing. And it's amazing to me that this isn't everywhere. It's actually not amazing to me that this isn't everywhere. You know, like, the, it's interesting. Here's another interesting thing that's kind of leading me towards this path for the show tonight, is the derailment in Ohio took place like on the 8th, and no one in the media started talking about it until like this week. And I mean, it's a environmental disaster. It's a transportation disaster. And it's a, should be what would normally be constituted, like FEMA would be there and the news would be all over this. And it's just nothing happened until like this week. And when it did, everyone's just like, everything's cool. Just go back. Well, I am right on the Ohio River here in the steel buckle of the Rust Belt. And, you know, people are already kind of talking about, like, well, what happens when this shit hits the water table and just flows south right down this Ohio River? And I'm like, well, I don't know about you guys, but I have a whole compartment full of water filters. I got stored water up, I mean, everywhere. So, anyhow, so I want to talk about the Seymour Hersh thing. You'll hear, I'll probably slip and call him Cy Hersh every now and again, because that's what his friends call him. Anyhow, he's not like a Fox News guy. He's not a Blaze dude. He's not like with Ben Shapiro or whatever. He's an icon of the left. You might have read his work about the My Lai massacre. He did a lot of work about Watergate for the New York Times. He also talks a lot about those stories, saying when he was breaking them, especially the My Lai massacre, people didn't want the story because it was too crazy. Even though they were all anti-war, they didn't want the story because of the political implications. So, you know, Mr. Hersh got, he has a Substack, and he published this massive article on his Substack, and virtually nobody is talking about it. And it's amazing. Probably, if I remember correctly, the when the Nord Stream pipeline got bombed, I was on, I believe, I don't remember what episode or what, whatever it was, but I remember being like, I think that we fucking did this. Like, I'm pretty sure that we did. It's kind of the only thing that makes any kind of sense. And here, Mr. Hersh goes, this is a very long article. I'm not exactly sure how I'm gonna tackle it. So I guess I'll just take off. We'll just start here and figure it out. And, the article is on Substack, and it's on his free side. He published it on the free side. So you can get the whole thing. It's like 20, it's like 30 pages. So here we go. First, there's a little bit of background that we kind of need to talk about to set this up. You know, we're about context here. And one of the things that I wanted to bring up is, so the last guy, Orange Man had effectively closed down the Nord Stream pipeline. He was like, look, Germany and Europe are, they're allied, they're like preferred allied I can't remember how it goes, but, you know, they should be buying their oil from us, not from Russia. And so he had effectively shut down the Nord Stream pipeline. Well, and once President Biden took office, one of the first things he did was he was like, nope, we're going to allow the Nord Stream to be completed. It's a it wound up being a smack in the face to all the NATO allies. It basically was a giant win for Russia. It was a slap in the face to all of domestically our energy producing companies and industries. So the only reason this thing was operating in the first place is because Joe said yes. He said let's do it. Let's let them do it. Because who knows. So here's to Cy Hirsch's Substack. How America took out the Nord Stream pipeline. The U.S. or the New York Times called it a mystery, but the United States executed a covert sea operations that was kept secret until now. So Hirsch talks a little bit here about the U.S. Navy's diving salvage center. And the reason this is important is because if he were to use JSOC guys or Joint Operations Special Forces, anybody that fell under that tier of operator, he couldn't have kept it off the books. And this Hirsch gets real twisted up about the fact that this obviously didn't go through Congress, or at least not the normal channels of Congress to get this operation approved. So he spends a little bit of time explaining why he's using these guys, and we'll talk about this here. The center has been training highly skilled deep water divers for decades. Once assigned to American military units worldwide, they're capable of technical diving to do good, using C4 explosives to clear harbors and breaches of debris, unexploded ordnance, as well as the bad, like blowing up foreign oil rigs and fouling intake valves for undersea power plants and destroying locks on crucial shipping canals. This the Panama City Center, which boasts the second largest indoor pool in America. Sorry, I gotta put my phone down. The second largest indoor pool in America was the perfect place to recruit the best, the most taciturn graduates of the diving school, who successfully did last summer what they had been authorized to do. 260 feet under the surface of the Baltic Sea last June, the Navy divers, operating under the cover of a widely publicized midsummer NATO exercise known as Baltrops 22, planted the remotely triggered explosive that, 3 months later, destroyed three of the four Nord Stream pipelines, according to a source with direct knowledge of the operational planning. Two of the pipelines, which were collectively known as Nord Stream 1, had been providing Germany with much of the Western European countries with cheap Russian natural gas for more than a decade. The second pair of pipelines, called the Nord Stream 2, had been built, but they were not yet operational. Now, with Russian troops massing on the Ukrainian border and the bloodiest war in Europe since 1945 looming, Joe Biden saw the pipeline as a vehicle for Vladimir Putin to weaponize natural gas for his political and territorial ambitions. Asked for comment, Adrienne Watson, the White House spokesperson, said in an email, "This is false and completely fiction." Tammy Thorpe, a spokesperson for the Central Intelligence Agency, similarly wrote, "This claim is completely and utterly false." Biden's decision to sabotage the pipelines came after more than 9 months of highly secret back and forth debate inside Washington's national security community about how best to achieve that goal. For much of that time, the issue was not whether to do the mission, but how to get it done, with no overt clue as to who was responsible. There was a vital bureaucratic reason for relying on the graduates of the center's hardcore dive school in Panama City. The divers were Navy only, but not members of America's Special Operations Command, whose covert operations must be reported to Congress and briefed in advance to the Senate and House leadership, the so-called Gang of Eight. The Biden administration was doing everything possible to avoid leaks as the planning took place in 2021 into the first months of 2022. Joe Biden and his foreign policy team, the National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, Secretary of State Tony Blinken, and Victoria Nuland, the Undersecretary of State for Policy, had been vocal and consistent in their hostilities to the two pipelines, which ran side by side for 750 miles under the Baltic Sea from two different ports in the northeastern Russia near the Estonian border, passing close to the Danish island of Bornholm before ending in northern Germany. The direct route, which bypassed any need to transit Ukraine, had been a boon for the German economy, which enjoyed an abundance of cheap Russian natural gas, enough to run its factories and heat its homes, while enabling German distributors to sell excess gas at a profit throughout Western Europe. Actions that could be traced to the administration would violate U.S. promises to minimize direct conflict with Russia. The secrecy was essential. From its earliest days, Nord Stream 1 was seen by Washington and its anti-Russian NATO partners as a threat to Western dominance. The holding company behind it, Nord Stream AG, which incorporated incorporated in Switzerland in 2005, the partnership with Gazprom, publicly traded Russian company producing enormous profits for shareholders, which is dominated by oligarchs known to be in the thrall of Putin. Gazprom controlled 51% of the company, with four European energy firms, one in France, one in Netherlands, and two in Germany, sharing the remaining 49% stock and having the right to control downstream sales of inexpensive natural gas to local distributors in Germany and Western Europe. Gazprom's profits were shared with the Russian government, and the state gas and oil revenues were estimated in some years to amount as much as 45% of Russia's annual budget. So America's political fears were real. Putin would now have an additional and much-needed major source of income, and Germany and the rest of Eastern Europe would become addicted to low-cost natural gas supplied by Russia, while diminishing European reliance on America. In fact, that's exactly what happened. Many Germans saw Nord Stream 1 as part of the deliverance of former Chancellor Willy Brandt's famed Ostpolitik theory, which would enable post-war Germany to rehabilitate itself in other European nations destroyed in World War II by, among other initiatives, utilizing cheap Russian gas to fuel the prosperous Western European markets and trading economy. I'm skipping ahead. Like I said, this is very long. Let's see here. Throughout all of this, Russian troops had been steadily and ominously building up the borders of Ukraine, and by the end of December, more than 100,000 soldiers were in positions to strike from Belarus and Crimea. Alarm was growing in Washington, including the assessment from Blinken that those troops could be doubled in short order. The administration's attention once again was focused on Nord Stream. As long as Europe remained dependent on the pipelines for cheap natural gas, Washington was afraid that countries like Germany would be reluctant to supply Ukraine with the money and the weapons it needed to defeat Russia. It was at this unsettled moment that Biden authorized Jake Sullivan to bring together an interagency group to come up with a plan. All options were put on the table, but only one would emerge. All right. It's time to take a break here. If you have your favorite weapon of mass distraction, like I have my favorite weapon of mass distraction, should be a Jin Jihad. You can go to abercast.com. The storefront is there, and you can find the vessel of the art You can order right from the website. Check out the t-shirts and the tarot cards and the graphic novels and comic books that are provided. Thank you very much. It's Ebercast.com. In December of 2021, 2 months before the first Russian tanks rolled into Ukraine, Jake Sullivan convened a meeting of newly formed task force, men and women from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the CIA, and the State and Treasury Departments, and asked for recommendations about how to respond to Putin's impending invasion. It would be the first in a series of top-secret meetings in a secure room on the top floor of the old executive office building adjacent to the White House. That was also the home of President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. There was usual back and forth chatter that eventually led to a crucial preliminary question. Would the recommendation forwarded by the group to be to the president be reversible, such as another layer of sanctions and currency restrictions, or irreversible? That is kinetic action which could not be undone. What became clear to the participants, according to the source with direct knowledge of the process, is that Sullivan intended for the group to come up with a plan for the destruction of the two Nord Stream pipelines, and that he was delivering on the desires of the president. Over the next several meetings with the participants debated options for an attack. The Navy proposed using a newly commissioned submarine to assault the pipeline directly. The Air Force discussed dropping bombs with delayed fuses that they could set off remotely. The CIA argued that whatever was done would have to be covert. Everyone involved understood the stakes. This is not kiddie stuff, unquote, the source said. If the attack were traceable to the United States, this is an act of war. Yeah, it is an act of war. Just like arming the Ukrainians with Abrams tanks seems like an act of war. At the time, the CIA was directed by William Burns, a mild-mannered former ambassador to Russia who had served as a deputy Secretary of State in the Obama administration. Burns quickly authorized an agency working group whose ad hoc members included, by chance, someone who was very familiar with the capabilities of the Navy's deep sea divers in Panama City. Over the next weeks, members of the working group began to craft a plan for a covert operation that would use deep sea divers to trigger an explosion along the pipeline. Something like this had been done before. In 1971, the American intelligence community learned from still undisclosed sources that two important units of the Russian Navy were communicating via an undersea cable buried in the Sea of Okhotsk, the Russian Far East Coast. The cable linked the Navy command to the mainland headquarters in Vladivostok. A handpicked team of Central Intelligence Agency and National Security Agency operatives were assembled somewhere in the Washington area, deep undercover, and worked out a plan using Navy divers, modified submarines, and deep submarine rescue vehicles that succeeded. After much trial and error, it located the Russian cable. The divers planted a sophisticated listening device on the cable that successfully intercepted the Russian traffic and recorded it on a taping system. The NSA learned the senior Russian Navy officers, convinced of the security of their communications link, chattered away with their peers without encryption. The recording device and its tape had to be replaced monthly, and the project rolled on merrily for a decade until it was compromised by a 40-year-old civilian NSA technician named Ronald Pelton, who was fluent in Russian. Pelton was betrayed by a Russian defector in 1985 and sentenced to prison. He was paid just $5,000 by the Russians for his revelations about the operation, along with $35,000 for other Russian operational data he provided that was never made public. That underwater success, codenamed Ivy Bells, was innovative and risky and produced invaluable intelligence about the Russian Navy's intention and planning. So this just speaks to the playbook, right? Like, it's adding context to the situation. They've done something like this before back in the day. Dust this playbook off and let's take a look at it. Let's take a look at how we can use this as a jumping off point. The interagency group was initially skeptical of the CIA's enthusiasm for a covert deep sea attack. There were too many unanswered questions. The waters of the Baltic Seas were heavily patrolled by the Russian Navy, and there were no oil rigs that could be used as cover for diving operations. Would the divers have to go to Estonia, right across the border from Russia's natural gas loading docks, to train for the mission? It would be a goat fuck, the agency was told. Throughout all of this scheming, the source said, some working guys in the CIA and the State Department were saying, don't do this, it's stupid, and it'll be a political nightmare if it comes out. Let's jump ahead here. On February 7th, less than 3 weeks before the seemingly inevitable Russian invasion of Ukraine, Biden met with his White House office in his White House office with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, who, after some wobbling, was now firmly on the American team. At the press briefing that followed, Biden defiantly said, quote, if Russia invades, there will no longer be a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it, unquote. 20 days earlier, Undersecretary Nuland had delivered essentially the same message at a State Department briefing with little press coverage. Quote, I want to be very clear to you today, she said in response to a question. Quote, if Russia invades Ukraine one way or another, Nord Stream 2 will not move forward, unquote. Several of those involved in the planning of the pipeline missions were dismayed by what they viewed as an indirect reference to the attack. It was like putting an atomic bomb on the ground in Tokyo and telling the Japanese that we are going to detonate it, one source said. The plan was for the options to be executed post-invasion and not advertised publicly. Biden simply didn't get it or ignored it. So, news flash, Biden has a track record of not keeping things in the bag. He has a track record of telling everyone exactly what he's going to do before he does it. We've tracked multiple times about how he's a plagiarist. I would venture to say he's a racist, and he's not very smart. He wasn't very smart before whatever happened to him, be it age or whatever happened to him. He wasn't smart when he was a young man, and arguably a lot less smart now. But he's never been able to keep a secret. See the episode on Extortion 1-7, all of it. I have a whole section in the topic link about Joe Biden. Like, just go listen to it. Here, to this point, Biden, back to the article, Biden and Nuland's indiscretions, if that is what it was, might have frustrated some of the planners, but it also created an opportunity. According to the source, some of the senior officials of CIA determined that blowing up the pipeline would no longer be considered a covert operation because the president just announced that we knew how to do it. But here's an unintended consequence, or three-dimensional chess move. I don't know, however you feel about it. But the plan to blow up the Nord Stream 1 and 2 was suddenly downgraded from a covert operation requiring that Congress be informed to one that was deemed as a highly classified intelligence operation with U.S. military support. And under the law, the source explained, there was no longer a legal requirement to report that operation to Congress. All they had to do now is just do it. But it still had to be secret. The Russians had superlative surveillance in the Baltic Sea. Norway was a perfect place to base the mission. In the past few years of the East and West crisis, the U.S. military has vastly expanded its presence inside Norway. whose western borders run 1,400 miles along the northern Atlantic Ocean and merges above the Arctic Circle in Russia. The Pentagon has created high-paying jobs and contracts amid some local controversy by investing hundreds of millions of dollars to upgrade and expand American's Navy and Air Force facilities in Norway. The new works included, but most importantly, an advanced synthetic aperture radar far up north that was capable of penetrating deep into Russia and came online just as the American intelligence community lost access to a series of long-range listening sites inside China. The newly refurbished American submarine base, which had been under construction for years, had become operational. And more American submarines were now able to work closely with their Norwegian colleagues to monitor and spy on major Russian nuclear readouts 250 miles to the east on the Kola Peninsula. America also had vastly expanded a Norwegian air base in the north and delivered to the Norwegian Air Force a fleet of Boeing-built P-8 Poseidon patrol planes to bolster its long-range spying on all things Russia. In return, the Norwegian government angered liberals and some moderates in its parliament last November by passing the Supplementary Defense Cooperation Agreement under the New Deal. The U.S. legal system would have had jurisdiction in certain agreed areas in the north over America soldiers accused of crimes off base, as well as over those Norwegian citizens accused of suspected interfering with the work at the base. So look, they're getting their ducks in a row. They're getting ready. They want to make sure no one's going to be able to get prosecuted. So back in Washington, planners knew they had to go to Norway. They hated the Russians, and the Norwegian Navy was full of superb sailors and divers who had generations of experience in highly profitable deep sea oil and gas exploration. They could also be trusted to keep the mission secret. The Norwegians may have had other interests as well. The destruction of Nord Stream, if the Americans could pull it off, would allow Norway to sell vastly more of its own natural gas to Europe. Sometime in March, a few members of the team flew to Norway to meet with the Norwegian Secret Service and Navy. One of the key questions was, where exactly in the Baltic Sea was the best place to plant these explosives? The Nord Streams 1 and 2, each with two sets of pipelines, were separated much of the way by little more than a mile as they made their run to the port of Greifswald in the far northeast of Germany. The Norwegian Navy was quick to find the right spot in the shallow waters of the Baltic Sea, a few miles off Denmark's Bornholm Island. The pipeline ran for more than a mile apart along the seafloor and was only 260 feet deep. That would be well within the range of the divers who, operating from a Norwegian Alta-class mine hunter, would dive with a mixture of oxygen, nitrogen, and helium streaming from their tanks and plant shaped C4 charges on the four pipelines with concrete protective covers. It would be tedious, time-consuming, and dangerous work. But the waters off Bornholm had another advantage. There were no major tidal currents, which would have made the task of diving much more difficult. After a bit of research, the Americans were all in. At this point, the Navy's obscure deep diving group in Panama City once again came into play. The deep sea school at Panama City, whose trainees participated in Ivy Bell, are seen as an unwanted backwater by the elite graduates of the Navy Academy in Annapolis, who typically seek the glory of being assigned as a SEAL, a fighter pilot, or a submariner. If one must become a black shoe that is a member of a less desirable surface ship command, there is always at least duty on a destroyer, a cruiser, or amphibious ship. At least glamorous of all is mine warfare, its divers never appear in Hollywood movies or on the cover of popular magazines. The best divers with deep diving qualifications are a tight community, and only the very best are recruited for the operational operation and told to be prepared to be summoned to the CIA in Washington, the source said. So we go on for a little bit here about the Swedish and Danish navies. You know, when you're doing something like this, I guess you want to keep your circle tiny. And so the fear is that the Swedish or Danish navies, if they detect something fishy going on, would sort of report it as fishy activity. And then there were some sort of political games being played with the Norwegian chain of command and figuring that someone in the chain of command needs to be briefed on it so they could massage it and pull it out of any kind of reporting if something were to go bad with the mission. There were some tactical issues too. They were afraid that the Russian Navy, who apparently has some pretty good technology about detecting and spotting mines, underwater mines. So they did some creative problem solving, and they figured out how to camouflage the mines to make them look like it's just sort of the background. And the other tactical problem they had is when would they go and put the mines in. And what they decided to do was they decided to use this BALTOPS, which is Baltic Operations 22, as a giant military exercise. So like when I was in Germany, they did this thing called Reforger, where all of the armor would roll through these German towns and scare the shit out of everybody. And it was just a way of, you know, while practicing moving, you know, like these large units where they want them to go and all that stuff. But it's also a way of just being like, look, we're still here. We still have all these guns. We got guns, knives, grenades, pointy sticks, tanks. They decided to use this exercise as a cover to deploy this team to set these mines up. So in order to do that, they had to convince the Sixth Fleet planners, these guys that were planning this exercise, to add research and development into the exercise. And this research and development would allow them to, you know, have this cover that they needed to send, you know, these divers in. Back to the article, the exercise is made public by the Navy, involved the Sixth Fleet in collaboration with the Navy's research and warfare centers. The at-sea event would be held off the coast of Bornholm Island and involve NATO teams of divers planting mines and competing teams using the latest underwater technology to find and destroy them. It was both useful exercise and ingenious cover. The Panama City boys would do their thing, and the C4 explosive would be in place by the end of BALTOPS 22. With a 48-hour timer attached, all of the Americans and Norwegians would be long gone by the first explosions. And then someone was like, hey, wouldn't it look kind of fishy if the pipeline exploded 2 days after BALTOPS was done? wouldn't that look kind of weird to everybody else? So they issued a request to the team that's on the ground. They were like, hey, can the Panama City boys figure out a way to command and control the detonations instead of setting these timers? So they wanted something put in place to where whenever the president chose, or let's not be funny, like Joe Biden's not making any of these decisions. Like whoever's telling Joe Biden what to do was like, okay, well, what they should do is they should put some kind of timer or put some kind of command and control detonation on it. So whenever I, who is definitely not Joe Biden, decides is the best time to blow the pipeline up, I can just let someone know, and then it can happen. So the boys, the Panama City boys on the ground, were like, look, we've been training for this. Like, why can't you just throw this bullshit at us at the last minute? But the CIA was like, no, bro, we got this. We're used to this. This kind of shit happens all the time to us. Like, we'll figure it out. You'll see this sort of action with Bill Clinton and the beginnings of, like, the war on terror. You'll see this sort of action with Barack Obama having... you know, Osama bin Laden or whoever, you know, not Osama bin Laden, but like whatever, having people in his sights and like refusing to have them have the snipers pull triggers and all this other kind of stuff. And back to the article here, Cy Hirsch's article. Last minute change was something the CIA was accustomed to managing, but it also renewed the concerns that some shared over the necessity and legality of the entire operation. The president's secret orders also evoked CIA's dilemma in the Vietnam War days when Johnson, confronted by growing anti-Vietnam War sentiment, ordered the agency to violate its charter, which specifically barred it from operating inside America by spying on anti-war leaders to determine whether they were being controlled by communist Russia. And, like, let's just forget what... never mind. The agency ultimately acquiesced and throughout the 70s became clear just how far it had been willing to go. There was subsequent newspaper revelations in the aftermath of Watergate scandals about the agency spying on American citizens, its involvement in the assassination of foreign leaders, and its undermining of the socialist government of Salvador Allende. Those revelations led to a dramatic series of hearings in the mid-70s in the Senate, led by Frank Church of Idaho, who made it clear that Richard Helms, the agency director at the time, accepted that he had an obligation to do what the president wanted, even if it meant violating the law. Wrong. That's wrong, Mr. Helms. An unpublished closed door... I don't know why everybody says this, like... I guess when I was a kid, you know, I heard this enough times where I believed it, where they're like, the FBI is the premier crime fighting blah, blah, blah of our time. It's corruptible, you know, men of honor and like all of this stuff. And then you just look at it and you're like, wait, what? they were sending blackmail tapes to Martin Luther King's wife. That doesn't seem uncorruptible. That doesn't seem honorable. Oh, wait, what'd they do? They were lying on surveillance requests for a tape about hookers peeing on someone. What? That doesn't seem honorable. I believe, J. Edgar Hoover was being blackmailed by the mob. That's why he refused to admit that they existed for decades. That doesn't seem very honorable. What? Like, once you get context and a little bit of history, you know, I'm probably a little bit older than you guys. Once your beard starts turning gray, a lot of stuff, you start connecting some dots, you know, and you're like, oh, the movies don't make any fucking sense. Anyhow, an unpublished closed-door testimony, Helms ruefully explained that you almost have an immaculate conception when you do something under secret orders from a president, whether it's right and that you should have, or it's wrong and you shall have it. The CIA works under different rules and ground rules than any other part of the government. He was essentially telling the senators that he, as head of the CIA, understood that he had been working for the crown and not the Constitution. Wrong. That's a red fucking flag, sir. The Americans at work in Norway operate under the same dynamic. and dutifully began work on the new problem, how to remotely detonate the C4 explosives on whoever controls Biden's orders. It was a much more demanding assignment than those in Washington understood. There was no way for the team in Norway to know when the president might push the button, or whoever is controlling the president might push the button. It would be in a few weeks or months or half a year or longer. The problem is the Baltic Sea is obviously it's salt water. Things corrode very, very quickly. There's problems with how radio signals work. Problems with other radios on boats out there. When I was in the service, I was a combat engineer, so I'm handling explosives is not a totally alien concept to me. And I do know that with radio controlled detonation, like, you're supposed to turn every other radio, like, in the fucking square mile off. Like, everything's got to go off because apparently there is a possibility that spare wattage out there or something presses these radio waves could compromise, you know, your detonation. So you got boats flying around on this thing, you have submarines using sonar to detect mines and all this shit, you have all these radio signals bouncing around from all these listening posts spying on Russia. So it seems like it might be a tall order. So they came up with a way to detonate the thing, to detonate the C4 by triggering or dropping and triggering a sonar buoy. You know, Raquel Welch and the Pope in a life raft. Those aren't buoys dropped by a plane on short notice. This procedure involved the most advanced signal processing technology. Once in place, a delayed timing device attached to any of the four pipelines could be accidentally triggered by a complex mix of ocean background noises throughout the heavy traffic, Balkan Sea, to near or distant ships, underwater drilling, seismic events, waves, and even sea creatures. To avoid this, the sonar buoy, once in place, would emit a sequence of unique low-frequency tonal sounds, much like those emitted by a flute or a piano. This would be recognized by the timing devices, and after preset hours of delay, triggered the explosives. You want a signal that's robust enough that no other signal could accidentally send a pulse that detonated the explosives. I was told by Dr. Theodore Postol, Professor Emeritus of Science, Technology, and National Security Policy at MIT, Postol, who has served as a science advisor to the Pentagon's chief in naval operations, said in the issue facing the group in Norway, because of Biden's delay was one of chance, the longer the explosives were in the water, the greater the risk that there was a random signal that would launch the bombs. So on September 26, 2022, a Norwegian Navy P-8 surveillance plane, which we had just given them, remember, the sort of towards the middle of the episode, made a seemingly routine flight and dropped a sonar buoy. The signal spread underwater initially to Nord Stream 2 and then to Nord Stream 1. And a few hours later, the high-powered C4 explosives were triggered and three of the four pipelines were put out of commission. Within a few minutes, pools of methane gas that remained in the shuttered pipelines could be seen spreading to the water, the surface of the world. The water surface and the world learned that something irreversible had taken place. So if you hear Biden talk about the environment, you know, he's like shutting down coal and gasoline and everything because he's going to have some kind of magic new electricity. We're all going to be driving electric cars here in 2 years or something like this. This is a guy who speaks out of one side of his mouth about the environment all the time. The Green New Deal, and we need to lower our emissions and our footprints and cows farting, and we need to eat bugs, to blasting this pipeline and just shoving all this natural gas out. Not only that, but he's going to put our European allies at risk for starving during the winter. So when this move came out, like this, if it were to be getting more press or more people talking about it, which I think they will be, I think they will be soon. But when more and more of these news outlets and stuff start talking about this, Europe is going to be fucking pissed at us. Like, they're going to be going fucking crazy that we did this shit. In my estimation, I mean, I can't see how they wouldn't be mad. You know what I mean? All right, let's wrap this up. The source had a much more streetwise view of Biden's decision to sabotage more than 1,500 miles of Gazprom pipeline as winter approached. Well, he said, speaking of the president, I gotta admit, the guy's got a pair of balls, he said. He said he was going to do it, and he did it. Okay. He said he was going to do it, and someone told him he said he was going to do it, and someone did it. But like, come on, the guy doesn't even know what fucking room he's in. He doesn't understand how to get off a stage. He doesn't know who's standing next to him. He doesn't know that the people that in the room that he's talking to, who's dead, and he tries to talk to them. Like, the guy doesn't have a pair of balls. Like, he's not impressive. He's not an impressive person. Asked what he thought of the Russians, why he thought the Russians failed to respond, and he said cynically, maybe they want the capability to do the same thing the U.S. did. It was a beautiful cover story, he went on. Behind it was a covert operation that placed experts in the field and equipment that operated on a covert signal. The only flaw was the decision to do it. So, there you have it. I'm John Towers, and this is Abracast. See you soon.
Thank you for listening, and we hope that you enjoyed the show. Please send an email or find us on social media and let us know what you think about the show. We would appreciate it if you would give us a 5-star rate and review wherever you find your favorite podcasts. You can find Stigmata Studios graphic novels and comic books at abracast.com. Welcome to the Red Archive. Get access to over 50 hours of archived episodes, more bonus audio, additional exclusive content. All this for only $1 a month. Find the link to the Red Archive at abracast.com.